King JT from Saskatoon.
All right.
Hello.
This is the Apocrypha of the DC Animated Universe.
All right.
That's Teen Titans and Static Suck.
Well, I'll agree with the first half of that statement.
Well, that's fine. Well, actually, I should say, well, that's fine, but...
Yes.
Well, that's fine. However, I'm just saying.
Just let me get fresh water. I'll be right with you guys.
Okay.
Okay.
What was that?
I think that was a cat.
Oh. I hope it was a cat.
We should have an episode called Extreme Cartoons, Neil.
Extreme Cartoons.
Extreme Ghostbusters, G.I. Joe Extreme, Extreme Dinosaurs.
Oh, son of a bitch.
No? You want to veto that?
I don't know. Because that's a very loose connection.
It has to have extreme in the title, damn it.
Extreme.
Alrighty.
G.I. Joe Extreme.
God, that show sucked.
You go out, Extreme Ghostbusters.
Sucked.
See, I want to do a theme show about cartoons called Extreme, and Neil's like, I don't know.
Well, I mean...
Well, the only thing they have in common is that they suck.
And they're extreme.
Yeah, but that's... That was just a label they used in the 90s that no kid cared about, and... I don't know, they thought it was cool.
Yeah, how bad the extreme thing got, there were extreme corn chips.
Oh, God.
It had, like, extreme-looking corn husk on there. Looking like it was a corn husk to the extreme. It looked like JT's avatar on Skype.
You have something to say about my avatar, Ben?
Just it looks like the extreme corn chips.
See, I don't think it merely needs to have extreme in the title. It could be any property that's kind of reimagined to be hip and happening and appeal to the kids through quote unquote coolness. And the show image that we should use should be Poochie.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
See, and that way, I think one of the shows we can nominate is Rocket Power. Because, my God, that show was terrible, and it embodied the extreme mentality of cartoons back then.
What about... You know what cartoon I hated?
What?
Street Sharks.
Oh, God.
It's like, stop...
Jawsome.
Stop trying to rip off Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It hasn't worked for 5 years. Stop.
I'll argue for Street Sharks, but I'll put down Extreme Dinosaurs. Aha! Extreme show.
But they crossed over with Extreme Dinosaurs.
And then never did it again.
Okay. But they crossed over. It happened.
Yeah, it's just... Ugh, God.
It happened. I saw it happen. I watched it happen.
You can't convince me it happened, Ben. There's no such thing.
You want to hear another crossover that almost happened, but because the creator of the show himself actually wrote it, it can actually be argued as canon.
What?
The Atlantis movie is in continuity with Gargoyles.
God.
Okay, I've heard you mention that before, but I don't think you've ever explained it.
When they were actually going to make an Atlantis cartoon series, Greg Weisman was writing an episode that had Demona show up in Atlantis.
Oh.
Fighting the hunter in Atlantis.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I just thought of another extreme cartoon. Stunt Dogs.
Stunt Dogs.
What the hell is Stunt Dogs?
It is one of the most obnoxious cartoons of the late 80s.
Yeah, basically 90s. Basically, the lyrics for the song is, "We are the stunt dogs, so watch our show."
Just look it up on YouTube. You'll be like, oh, my God.
And would it be the extreme spelling of dog with the A-W in it?
Yes! Yes, exactly.
What the hell am I watching?
I think JT found stunt dogs.
He's probably just sitting there with his jaw gaping open like, I can't believe this exists.
Yeah, like my hand reaching towards the screen, like, what the hell is this?
Did you see the part with the dog just showing up at the opening?
Yeah. The villain's called Fungus?
Yeah.
Yeah, it basically, the stunt dogs are stuntmen, and the villains are the stunt scabs who, like, if the stunt dogs unionize or something, I don't know why they call them scabs.
I never thought about that.
Jobs away from the stunt dogs?
They try to steal jobs away from them, yes.
Okay. Quick palate cleanser. On the screen next to is the intro to My Pet Monster.
Oh, on me, the next link is Filmation Ghostbusters.
Oh, God.
But let's get started on DC Apocrypha. Tell me,
Jim, the transmission! I am TFG1 Mike, and you should be listening to my very first podcast, the TFG1 Podcast. 24 episodes covering the entire U.S. run of the 1984 Transformers cartoon. I also have a few supplemental episodes and an interview with Stan Bush. I bring in guest hosts who will be full-time co-hosts in Steve Megatron and fan of the show, now co-host Pecan Court Michael. So check out the TFG1 Podcast. You can find it on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Transform and roll out.
Welcome again to Animation Aficionados. I am your host, Ben, and we're joined by my co-host, TV's Mr. Neil.
Blathering blatherskies.
Okay, and we have with us Thomas Revor.
Boise's TV's Mr. Neil once on radio.
And we have with us, again, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh, I hate Jeff Johns.
And today we're talking about the Apocrypha of the DC Animated Universe, books of the DC Animated Universe Bible that have been struck from the canon.
Well, shot from the canon, at least.
And we'll start out with the one that we'll talk about the least right now, which is Static Shock. You know what? I didn't mind Static's first season because it was just, you know, I like the Milestone characters. Let me just get that out of the way. I love the Milestone characters. And I thought that this was a unique opportunity to bring in the Milestone universe in an animated form. When Dwayne McDuffie sold out and decided to cross over to the DC animated universe versus introducing Icon, I thought he sold out and cheapened it and sort of artistically went bleh. And then he made it worse by introducing the Hoop Squad.
Oh, boy.
So I'll let whoever wants to go first.
I'm just going to throw in a quick jab here. The cartoon was about an African-American kid who plays basketball and rides on a skateboard. I am so sick of that character. They should have just made him Carlton Banks.
Yeah. I like the fact that they actually had him. I mean, they can throw in all the homeboy stuff they wanted, but he was, I like the fact that they had him as, he was smart. He loved his family. You know, he tries to do the right thing. So, I mean, that right there, role model worthy, maybe not, but the fact that they made the attempt rather than just making him another jive talking character, scores points in my book.
And, you know, like I said, it's, I thought there was a prime opportunity here, and I think the crossover to the DC Anime Universe cheapened the product, personally. I want to hear what your thoughts are on that, guys.
I think the crossover with the DC Universe was more a last-ditch attempt to resuscitate a series that was dying.
Sort of like how the Critic crossed over with The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Years after it was canceled. I mean, I liked Static kind of the whole way through. Yes, there were a lot of elements I disliked, like the aforementioned Hoop Squad, or the time Shaq showed up and fought crime with Static.
Oh, no.
Or one of the, what was it, NSYNC or Beastie Boys or one of those, you know.
Backstreet Boys, I think it was.
Yeah, it was the Backstreet Boys. It was the Backstreet Boys 5 years after they were not popular anymore.
Yeah.
I like the show, like I like the kind of, you know, the kind of Spider-Man aesthetic that, you know, it's this kid who gets, you know, great powers, great responsibility.
I think it's racist that every time there's a black character he has to get electrical powers.
Yeah.
It happens too often. It's a stereotype. The Electro African American.
No, it's
it happens too often.
That does happen too often, but overall I like the show. And when, you know, the first season they mentioned, well, Clark Kent had a day job. They have that line. That's like, okay, it's not a part of the DC universe. And then, hey, here's the Justice League.
Yep.
I thought it was a poor choice, just the fact that they were just trying to, you know, they couldn't have something original.
Well, or even from the Milestone universe. Like I mentioned, Icon is a black superhero. He's basically the black Superman. And you know what his secret identity is? It's a black Republican lawyer.
Yeah. And then his origin was the same as Superman, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You could have introduced Icon animated. I would have paid to see Icon animated. And this is something I got into an argument with Dwayne McDuffie. I called him a sellout because he wasn't willing to push Icon in animated form. He didn't like me very much.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping they would have brought in Hardware.
Yeah, like I said, you have the whole Milestone universe, very rich characters, except for none of the above, but we don't mention that.
Well, I mean, I will say that there was one episode that I liked. I would have liked it better if it had the original concept behind it.
Okay.
And that was the episode Blast from the Past.
Is that the one with the 70s superhero that was also black and electrically powered?
Soul Power, yes. Originally, though, that wasn't supposed to be that. They had to come up with that at the last minute because DC finally came down and said, no, you can't use the character you want to use.
Was it going to be Black Vulcan?
No.
Was it going to be Icon?
It was going to be Black Lightning himself, the original one.
But isn't Black Lightning Black Vulcan?
Well, realize that Black Lightning is probably the character that's been rehashed more times than anybody else without ever actually making an appearance himself, because Black Vulcan from the Super Friends show was supposed to be Black Lightning, who was created in the 70s as well, but they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to use that character name for some god-awful reason, so they created the character of Black Vulcan instead, which made absolutely no sense.
Well, he wasn't there to, like, being logical and stuff, so he wasn't Black Vulcan.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. let's go ahead and name a lightning-powered character of whatever race, creed, or whatever, after the God of Fire in the Forge.
Well, they can call him Black Thor, because then that just sounds racist.
Well, then that would get Marvel up and its knickers in a twist, so.
Yeah.
But it really was. I mean, it was all the way down the line. Black Lightning never really made an appearance until JLU.
That's true. That is definitely true. I just saw a missed opportunity all the time. And, you know, they did introduce some interesting characters like Anazi, the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He was interesting. I can give him that. But I really would...
More of the mythological powers rather than making him the Black Spider-Man.
Right.
They gave him powers based off of the...
A Nazi character from the mythology, yeah.
Exactly.
And
illusions and such.
And like I said, my biggest thing is they didn't once dip into the Milestone universe. Not once. And that pisses me off because...
Well, they kind of did.
Because some of the characters they brought over were from... I can't think of the
what's well, the there was that they had there. There was the gang of the Nocturnal Bang Babies. Basically, they were supposed to be the Blood Syndicate, which was like the superpowered gang title
that's
they had.
That's what it was. Well, not just that, but some of the characters they had in there. Like, they had Aquamarine, who was introduced in the Blood Syndicate comics. Some of the others.
Alva?
Yeah. Alva was from Hardware. He was the guy's boss. So yeah, they did have other characters, but they didn't have some of the title characters.
That's true. Like I said... The biggest thing is I will still fight to the death about the fact that McDuffie was too chicken to push for Icon.
Yeah.
Because
they would have had to make effort and make the universe, you know, they would have had to make their own universe. And it was such a cop-out to just bring in the Justice League because then, well, if you're watching Justice League, you know, they got this exigent character over this way.
Yeah. I mean, from a business standpoint, I agree with bringing in the Justice League because Justice League was popular. People were watching that. Static at the time. It was in its third season, I believe.
It was in its death throes.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I mean, they actually brought over Batman and Robin at the beginning of the second season. So, I mean, it wasn't doing as well as they expected. So they had to have some sort of infusion from a popular series. So they bring in Batman and Robin. They bring in Green Lantern. They bring in the Justice League. And
the one.
It must have done something because, I mean, the show lasted two more seasons.
It did do something. But
one thing I got to ask, though, Ben, is when you watch the Justice League crossover, how many of you thought of Superman 3 when Richie got absorbed by Brainiac?
Well, you know what? I had the problem with the fact that that Richie beat Brainiac by using the power of Napster, and you have Brainiac in that really deep, stupid voice saying, "I will bring the funk down."
Okay. Yeah. how much did Corey Burton have to wash his mouth out after saying that line?
Yeah, it. In number one, Corey Burton voiced the original Brainiac. They just told him, you can't sound like Brainiac when you're doing Brainiac. You have to sound deep-voiced. And he's like, why? I always did Brainiac this way. And they're like, I don't know. Just do it. And he did it.
He's a more funky Brainiac. He got to bring it down.
Bring the funk down.
Now, but again, you have to also consider the source. Because Static Shock, and yes, they changed the name of it from Static, the original comic, to Static Shock for some unknown reason, probably more marketable, was being marketed more towards a younger audience than Batman, Superman, Justice League was.
But the thing is this, I hate the age demographic argument because it always says you have to change something, dumb it down, make it extreme, or some other bullshit like that to make it appeal to kids. And that's
no argument here. I mean, this to me, this is the Cartoon Network argument where you have shows like Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, Megas XLR, Samurai Jack versus Flapjack and Chowder.
And total drama bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, this is animators and writers versus management. This is people who know what they're doing versus people who think they know what they're doing. This is excellent writers versus Dan DiDio. I mean, it's talent versus head up their rears.
And like I said, I understand all that, but this, at the same time, I'm starting to sound like Blanchard. I should stop.
But, I mean, to go on the flip side, I mean, you take it and put it in a different context. I mean, take the character of Static, and when they did the Justice League episode of the Once and Future Thing, Part 2, where they visited the future, where they had Terry McGinnis, Batman Beyond, where they had the elderly Static. I mean,
that worked.
That was a great character. That was a great setting. The characters were used and had their personalities come out. They didn't have to do a very special episode of Justice League with this.
And yeah, they also didn't give. Sorry, Ben.
And another thing is, this ties into the episode of Static Shock where Static traveled into the Batman Beyond future, which was a terrible episode because it implies you can make knockout gas stronger by electrifying it.
Yeah.
And the best thing about the Once and Future thing is Static realized that his body condom costume was just the worst idea ever.
And by the way, there was a slight hint in that episode that Static Shock is no longer in a DCAU continuity. You had actual Hypertime Lightning Strike Static, which means he was erased from continuity.
And plus it had the real Green Lantern in there, so...
Don't be one of those. Oh, Jesus. Come on.
You trying to give him an aneurysm?
Is it working yet?
You know what? It's fine because he wasn't Jesus Jordan there.
If it wasn't Alan Scott, then it's Hal Jordan.
I'm just saying,
Guy Gardner was before John Stewart.
Jesus.
Like I'm saying, at least he wasn't Jesus Jordan in the 2 minutes he was in there. That's fine by me. That's fine. His sins weren't being absolved.
Yeah, and he does get a couple points in the plus column for being voiced by Adam Baldwin.
Yes.
Yes. Like I said, he wasn't having his sins absolved by the writer, so I'm fine with it. It's but moving on, I think honestly Static Shock suffered a lot because they kept on trying to do gimmick episodes in the later seasons, especially with the Hoop Squad, Shaquille O'Neal, and the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, I mean, there were some good episodes on the flip side though too. I mean, I'm looking through the episode list. There was one called Pop's Girlfriend where Static's father is dating a cop. And I mean, it wasn't an over the top, it wasn't a gimmick one, it was a nice one. There was the one about the memorial service where they were going to talk about his mother. And that was a more soul searching one. I liked that episode. It wasn't, you know, beating you over the head with certain things. But on the flip side, as you said, I mean, then there was the one with, well, anytime they had to have a real life guest star.
And they had to make that guest star a superhero.
Well, they didn't make Shaquille O'Neal a superhero. They didn't make, thank God, Little Romeo a superhero.
I hate superhero. He was already Steel.
You know what I hated? They had an episode where, when they introduced Rubber Band Man in the first season, he was kind of cool anti-hero. And then when he was in the last season, they made him illiterate just to do a special episode.
Yeah, and they made him a sidekick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah.
And that pissed me off because he was interesting on his own, and he was interesting when he was at first a villain, and then he was interesting when he turned good, and then they decided to make him illiterate to do a special episode. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yep. And then you've got episodes. I mean, I still beat my head over against the wall when I take a look at episodes like Sins of the Fathers, I mean, written by Dan Reba, where Richie, Static's white friend, who nobody ever questions. I mean, they're friends. Color didn't matter. They're friends. But then they had to have an episode where his father's a racist. Come on.
You know what?
That really works? No.
You know what really? Richie was based off of the character, I believe it was Rick from the comics, who was gay.
Yeah.
And they never went there.
Because that's too much for Saturday morning.
Yeah.
It was on in the afternoon, dude.
I saw it on Saturdays.
It was on Kids WB, Say No More. I mean, the only thing way it could have been worse if it was on 4Kids.
Oh, it's, God.
One episode, the very special episode they never did, is where, you know, Virgil asks out, which was the redhead that he was all hot for?
I don't know. They replaced her with a black chick in the later seasons because they thought that having interracial stuff was dangerous.
No, they replaced her in the later seasons with the...
Daisy, I believe.
Daisy, who was Asian.
Are you sure she wasn't black? Because she had a really dark tone.
Yeah. No, I believe that Daisy was Asian.
Yeah, because she was good at math.
God.
Sorry, I couldn't help it.
All right, well, you know what? I don't want to pick on Static too much because, number one, Dave McDuffie died this year. And number two, because overall, it wasn't terrible as much as it really isn't a part of the DCAU. It was shoehorned in because they just wanted to ride on the DCAU's popularity. And number three, because they went really safe and they never introduced Icon, which would have been awesome, because how awesome would it be to have these black, have this black superhero who is a role model in and out of uniform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The very least, they could have brought in his sidekick Rocket.
Yeah. Rocket's a little bit more stereotypical, dude.
Well, yeah, but I mean, instead of bringing in the black Superman, you bring in, you know, a contemporary of Static, you know, a teenage superhero.
Yeah, the black Sky Boy. Yeah.
Well, it could have been worse. I mean, they could have brought in a younger black woman, a black girl who was an annoying sidekick wanting to be a partner with. Oh, wait, they did. Never mind.
Yeah, it's let's touch off of Static's shock for a moment, because I think you know what. It doesn't feel satisfying picking on Static Shock too much, because when you say Hoop Squad, you pretty much you're kicking a crippled man when you're down after you say Hoop Squad.
At least with Static Shock, you can say that they had good episodes.
They did have good episodes. They did have good ideas. They had good original characters. It's just that when they try to bring other stuff in that wasn't original, is when you felt the pain.
Indeed.
But we will briefly touch on the Zeta Project, because I don't think the Zeta Project really warrants enough to talk about for more than 5 minutes. It was an interesting idea, interesting spinoff in the future of the Batman Beyond future. Interesting, but I think ultimately futile, because I don't think it really could carry itself.
Yeah, because I did, of the Tooncast show that Blanchard did, I was on that episode with him, and
How did you carry that on for an hour? I don't see.
We were stretching that day. And honestly, the only thing I liked about Zeta Project was they had the one crossover episode with Batman Beyond, and that had one of my favorite characters from the Batman Beyond series was Mad Stan, voiced by Henry Rollins.
Mad Stan, yeah. Mad Stan is always gold. But
information overload, Batman, the world can't take anymore. It's like, okay, it's Henry Rollins. He's blowing shit up. I'm good.
See, I'll say I liked the Zeta Project, mainly because it was a reworking of one of my favorite things, which was a movie called The Questor Project, where it was a robot or an android in The Questor Project who was trying to find his way, find out who he was. So, I mean, Zeta had a lot of echoes of that. And I think that some of the stuff they did, it was an interesting concept. I think some of it played out rather well. I kind of like even the change of Zeta's look from his original appearance in Batman Beyond.
Which was very alien until they changed it to a more humanoid robot.
Yeah, well, I mean, giving the horseshoe head versus a humanoid head, it made it a little more empathetical as a character.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I did like the show. I think that the characters were interesting. I liked the character of Zeta. He wasn't the completely cold, completely clueless robotic character. He just needed little assistance. I like the character of Ro, his best friend, who was going through and showing him some of the things. So, like I said, there was a lot of echoes of Quester tapes to me on that. It had the hunted episode, I mean, the hunted feel to it for, you know, like, well, with back to Quester, the fugitive, to where they were on the run. So there was a continuity with that as well.
Yeah, and it kind of had a little touch of
the Hulk.
Well, the Hulk and a little bit of Mice and Men with, you know, you got this very naive slash special robot with Zeta who knows nothing about nothing really. And then you got Ro who's kind of playing, you know, the part of Lenny who's at the early part of the series, she just basically takes advantage of him for his ability to generate his own money.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking about this and, you know, I don't think they ever had an episode where Ro has to stop Zeta from squishing mice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I said,
they had that with Batman Beyond already, the episode where Zeta was introduced.
Yeah, but like I said, that's all I can really say about Zeta Project. I really can't expound on it too much because I don't think there really was enough meat to sustain the show for going on too long. And if there's not that much meat to sustain it for going on too long, there's not enough meat to sustain talking about it for too long either.
See, I think, I mean, they had Zeta Project was on for 2 seasons, and I think that it was probably enough. They needed to have a wrap-up for the show. I would have loved to have seen it go to a 3rd season and end there. But I don't think that it deserves some of the enmity which it has received.
It doesn't deserve any hate at all. I don't think it deserves any. It doesn't deserve any hate, but at the same time, I just don't think it really could carry itself in conversation or in dissecting it. It is what it is. It's a good idea. It's just that, you know, It just really didn't expound itself too much as such an original property that this was a character that had his own spinoff show, and I don't think there was ever a comic made for it.
There wasn't, and I don't know if it was a spinoff show. Batman Beyond never reached the popularity that the rest of the DC animated universe did.
Of course not, but at the same time, it was very bold. But
yeah. So having a spinoff from it was a risky maneuver. I mean, yes. You're taking a property that wasn't as anywhere near as popular as the main characters that it was spun off from, and then you're spinning something off from it. It's just depreciating there. So it really never got the level of support that it really deserved. You never really saw much advertising for Zeta Project.
No.
So, I mean, it was a lost cause. It was on there because they needed filler, and it was from a known quantity of creators.
That's true, but let's move on to the last book of the DC animated Apocrypha, the one that is most certainly struck out of the Bible, which is never in continuity.
Hey, Teen Titans is not in continuity.
Run away now.
Teen Titans, it is a terrible, terrible show. I called it wrong. I thought this was going to be good. DC animated, you tricked me. I should have known better when I saw Glenn Murakami's name dot Bruce Timm's. Because I'm sorry, Glenn, your human designs suck. I mean, I know you're Japanese and all, but this isn't anime design at all. Murakami, man, what's wrong with you, dude?
Well, see, I mean, it goes to me. I've got what I think is an even better reason to hate this series because I was a fan of Young Justice, the comic book.
Yes.
An excellently written comic book for people of all ages. Loved the artwork. Todd Knock, thank you very much.
Todd Knock, an amazing guy if you ever get a chance to talk to him.
Oh, yeah. I've met him several times at Comic-Con. Wonderful person.
Peter David, and, not so wonderful.
Well, he's got his moments. But I will say, this series, Young Justice, was canceled because of the Teen Titans cartoon. And then they just kind of went downhill in the Teen Titans comic book to where it's at now. So having that on there, just absolutely idiotic. Yeah. But I was willing to get, I mean, when I first heard about it, I was, as much as I hated the name change and the cancellation of Young Justice, I was willing to give Teen Titans a chance. And then I saw the first episode.
Yeah, and just to put it into perspective, the song is sung by a Japanese band called Hi Hi Puffy Amayumi. It's a J-pop band, and English is not their first language. I don't think it's even their second language. I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm picking on them, but
I think ABBA had an easier time, and they didn't speak English at all.
Well, Dancing Queen.
Yeah, that's all phonetic.
Fernando.
Yes,
I can hear the.
Well, even Shocking Blue with Venus. I mean, didn't speak a word of English, but said it phonetically.
Celine Dion couldn't speak English for the longest time, but she could sing in English.
Yeah, but she's Canadian, so we've got to make exception for that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, so Your Heart Will Go On?
I'll try.
Okay, but...
the entire series, it struck me as what a blind person describing Japanese animation to a deaf person would draw.
Yeah, and the thing is, this series is Weeaboo the series. It has you know, Hi Hi Puffy Amayumi doing the theme song, and they do it in English. But the thing is, every other episode they air them doing the theme song in Japanese.
Yeah,
and it sounds worse in Japanese than in English.
And here's what pisses me off: people are always like, "Well, Neil, you like anime. You should love this series." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's the wrong kind of anime. The anime I like." Was from the 80s and early 90s where Japan actually tried to make their animation for a world audience, and that's when anime was at its peak. And since then they've kind of regressed back into the weeaboo thing where they're just making it for themselves, and the only people who are really watching it are the people who are just so ingrained in the Japanese culture that, you know, like everyone else is locked out. It's like, I watch it, I don't get it. It's like, I don't.
Yeah, and
fuck you, Glenn Murakami.
And to me, the writing sucks ass too. It's because the whole series is just a wank to Robin. You have a scene in the first episode, in the first 5 minutes of the first goddamn episode, you have a scene where the super strong cybernetic human cyborg punches a stone golem in the face. It just shrugs it off, and then 2 seconds later, you have the 90-pound wet teenage martial arts artist kick him in the face, and he goes down like he's made out of wet toilet paper.
Yeah, but remember, he was trained by the Batman, who took down the Hulk with a couple of well-placed punches.
No, not going to buy that with a stone golem. Stone golem doesn't have pressure points. A stone golem is stone, Tom.
Yeah, but it's the Batman.
That was like how every episode was. You'd have, like, the four superpower characters just totally get their asses kicked, and then Robin would come in and save the day.
You had the episode where Robin decides to go training on his own, and when he's gone, the other four Titans all dress up in his costumes, talking about how great it is to be Robin, how they wish they were as great as Robin, and totally waking the Robin when he's not even there. This really happened, folks.
Yes. I remember the episode, and like I said, I mean, I can understand it to a point because... most of these characters, I mean, Starfire, Robin, Cyborg were created in the 80s for the new Teen Titans. Beast Boy was around in the 60s with the Doom Patrol. Even some of the other ones they brought in were Silver Age or later, Silver Age or Bronze Age. Robin is a Golden Age character. He's the most recognizable. I mean, Batman and. You always have to have something after the and there. So Robin is going to be the one who gets the most attention.
Although there's a right way in...
went a little over the top with a lot of it.
And, a lot over the top.
Yeah, there's a right way and a wrong way to bring focus on the character. Make him a good leader. Don't make him the guy who actually does the final blow himself with his weak 90-pound, pipe cleaner thin leg doing the kick.
With the steel shoes. Have you ever tried running in steel's old shoes? It doesn't work too well.
And, Starfire in the comics, Coriander, and I know that was a joke by Marv Wolfman, Coriander, not the spice, but the alien warrior princess.
But boy, was she spicy.
Was a badass warrior queen princess that, like, is like, you know, she's never, oh, so bubbly and sweet and naive and concerned and obsessed with mustard like this one is.
Yeah, I believe the words you're looking for, the Starfire in the comics, va-va-voom. Because that's the Starfire I wanted. Instead, we get, you know, a prototypical anorexic supermodel alien.
Well, let me put it this way. It's for people who are familiar with the anime Ranma One Half. You basically take shampoo and turn her into a Kasumi.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the easiest way to put how they change their personality.
I think I've read fanfics like that.
Okay, moving on.
You know what's really weird? You hop on DeviantArt and you look at people who've done like a combination of the comic version of this character and the cartoon version, and it's just
wrong.
It's just wrong. Don't do it, people. Stop it.
And you know what I liked was, you know, it's the comic Starfire Coriander. You know, Perez did an awesome job with like giving her almost cat-like look and focusing on the speed of her by making her hair like do this long thing. And in the cartoon, they could have done something like that with animation, but they just didn't. They didn't care. They just want to make this naive, cute little princess that's like obsessed with mustard or something. I don't know.
Yeah, each character in the comics, each one had some great personality. I mean, you had Robin, who was going through self-doubt at the time. Is he going to remain Robin? Is he going to break off and become his own hero? Is he going to be nothing more than the and Robin for the rest of his life? You had Cyborg, who was going through, I mean, lost half his body because of an accident which his father caused. You had Beast Boy, who was joking on the outside but crying on the inside, who had lost his entire family, both his parents and his adopted parents.
And by the way, he's not a vegan in the comics.
No, he is definitely a carnivore.
I've seen him eat hot dogs.
And not just a carnivore, but he was certainly an attempted Randy little bugger. You had Starfire, who was a freaking slave, an escaped slave, who received her powers after being tortured.
And who's an alien princess.
Yes, and a warrior. And then Raven, who was the, I've got to keep everything quiet, I've got to keep myself subdued, not emo girl.
Oh, you know, I love when Teen Titans first came out, one of the first internet reviews I read on the show thought that her superhero name was Goth Girl.
That wasn't that far.
And the thing is this, the voice casting was terrible. You have Robin, the voice actor for Robin is who again, Neil?
Oh, I don't have the guy's name in front of me, but it's the same kid who did all the male child voices in the 80s. He was the kid, he was the male kid on My Little Pony and Friends.
You know what, the thing is this, he only did one role really well in his adult career. That's when he played Pinocchio on Billy and Mandy, because that voice works well as a psychotic wooden boy who wants to boil a living boy live to eat his flesh.
Yeah, you're thinking Scott Menville.
Yes.
See, now, but on the flip side, I will say, they did have, as much as I hate the character, both in the comics and in the animated series, one of the genius bits of casting was in the character of
Ron Perlman as Ron Deathstroke Perlman. The Terminator, but they can't call him Deathstroke, even though they mentioned death in cartoons before then.
And they can't call him the Terminator because of legal reasons with the robots.
But you know what I love was, I talked to Marv Wolfman about a couple years ago, and I got to ask him, hey, Marv, how do you feel about the fact that you took the badass bounty hunter character of yours that used a shotgun and a sword and turned him into the Shredder? Number one, he didn't have an objection to that comparison. Number two, he says he preferred his more. So yep. The thing is this, they did turn Deathstroke the Terminator into Slade the Shredder.
But also, I mean, I have to admit, when given the comparison between Deathstroke the Terminator from the comics, who's another one, he's a parody of the anti-hero. I've always looked at him that way. You know, the one that can, who's badder than Batman, who can defeat Superman, you know, hated the character. And Slade from the animated series, where he was the plotter, where he put things into motion.
He had a robot ninja army.
I like the plotter more than...
Okay, what was his final goal? Tell me what his final goal is, and I will admit that he was a plotter. Tell me what his final goal is, because he never had a final goal.
His final goal was to get his soul back from Trigon.
Before then.
You did. You said final goal. Before that, it was definitely long-range plans, which they never really revealed, but it was, the first thing was to get Robin on his side. Which
Oh, God, Apprentice was the worst fan fiction episode they ever had. You want to know why? the first of all, they ripped off both Spider-Man and Empire Strikes Back in one episode. When Robin's having the dream sequence where he's fighting Slade and he rips off Slade's mask and it's his own face.
Yeah.
That's Empire. That is flat out Empire. Number two.
I'm sorry. When you talk worst episode with Teen Titans, you've got fights over that one. I mean, you've got episodes like, God, what was it? Employee of the Month with the UFO raids on cows. And
the Living Tofu. Yes, I know. I've seen it.
Or Mother May I. I mean, that one, what were they smoking at that point when they said, this is a good idea?
No, let me put it this way. In Apprentice, you know, they have this scene where they rip off Empire, and everyone in the room agrees that they ripped off Empire, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. They also ripped off the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie where Slade says to Robin, you'll see me as a father, and then Robin says, I already have a father. They ripped off Spider-Man there.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi Spider-Man. The Superior Spider-Man movie, once the new one comes out, we will see that it is superior.
Well, that's not going to take much. I mean, you've got... what is it with the girly boys that they have starring in movies nowadays?
And the thing is this, you have the producers and stuff talking smack about Raimi. I'm like, dude.
I'm sorry. When I hear that, if you take out Spider-Man 3, you don't have a leg to stand on.
And the thing is this, Raimi is Raimi. What the fuck are you doing picking a fight with Raimi? I mean, Raimi made Spider-Man work because Raimi was the guy who did Army of Darkness.
Well, it worked because he was a fan, and he had a love of the material.
And the thing is, he did the best Venom story because he hated Venom.
Well, like I said, Spider-Man 3...
it was the Sandman parts that sucked, dude.
I disagree. The Sandman parts were the good parts. The Venom parts were a black hole of suckage.
Can we take a break?
Yes.
Tooncast is dedicated to the cartoons we grew up with. 100 episodes and more make up one of the GCRN's most popular podcasts. Join hosts TFG and Mike, Optimus Solo, Terror the Rising Star, and tons of guest hosts. We also have voice actor and writer interviews. Tune in to Tooncast as we look back on the cartoons that defined us as geeks. You can find Tooncast on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Tune in.
Back to Teen Titans,
a whole other black hole, a whole galaxy of suck.
I'm looking through the list here, and I'm trying to. There were some things I liked. I liked in what was it, the fourth season, which I guess was supposed to be the last one, or the fifth season, where they started introducing the fourth season, where they started ramping up towards the Trigun story.
That was, but to me, but even it, before it then, you have to promise, go through.
But it failed.
To me, the big thing is this. It was just the production itself, because guess what happened? When there was never really a crowded city scene whenever they're fighting, it's like the storyboards and the animators are like, we aren't confident enough to show crowds whenever there's a fight, so they only just show this empty city whenever there's a fight. And it's this dull, boring thing that happens where they always, every time someone moves a little bit, they don't show the background moving with them. They just show this anime speed line cheat.
Yeah.
And it's cheap, it's cheat, it's a cheat, it's stupid. And another example is this. They did this scene once where they showed Starfire flying between two buildings. It was actually in the episode with the second Mad Mod episode. And you know how they animated the buildings moving? They had like two different shots of the buildings, just two photographs of buildings, and then they just got on rapidly, you know, floating back and forth between these two shots. That was the animation of movement.
Yeah, the entire thing, the entire series was what Americans think animation is, rather than what it actually is.
And there were another example is, I'm sorry for interrupting you, Tom, but the first Mad Mod episode actually had this stupid sequence with them doing the Scooby Doo chase bit.
Yeah,
with Puffy Amiyumi doing some more terrible J-pop.
Okay. Well, if you're going to rip off somebody, you might as well rip off quality.
But go ahead, Tom.
Well, I was going to say, now I kind of got distracted from what I was going to say. But, I mean, again, back to the episode list. There was so much potential which could have been done. I mean, the whole Terra story compare him, taken from the original comics, where Terra was an
sleeping
ally and a
Titan.
Yeah, well, I mean, a chain-smoking, vicious little bitch.
Actually, Marv Wolfman summed up Terra pretty well in one of his interviews. He called her the anti-Kitty Pride.
That works.
I like that. That works.
Because he says there's this really popular character over that that Claremont has in his X-Men book that everyone loves, who's Kitty Pryde. So I'm going to create the anti-Kitty Pryde for Teen Titans, or the Titans, or whatever series it was at the time.
New Teen Titans.
Yeah. So he made it. The original Terra was the anti-Kitty Pryde. Well, in the cartoon, she looks like, number one, she looks like a member of Hanson.
Yeah, and she was misunderstood.
And number two, they did the safest traitor subplot ever. You want to know why? One episode, she's introduced. Next episode, she's in, she joins the team. Next episode, she's in, she betrays the team. Safest traitor subplot ever.
Well, and it wasn't her fault. Yeah, I mean, that a lot of the storylines from that era and the 90s was... it really wasn't their fault. Somebody else made them do it. It's never take responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were afraid to shock the audience, unlike X-Men Evolution.
Yeah.
Blanchard.
They were afraid to shock the audience, unlike Justice League running at the same time that she revealed Hawker was a traitor.
So, I mean, it failed. I mean, to me, that's the greatest sin that they could have had, was the failed potential. And they took the cheap and they took the easy route.
And
they went for cheap jokes, they went for cheap animation, they went for cheap attempts at everything.
And one thing is, I always say that the Robin of this series is an asshole and a bastard, and I have proof of it. It's if you're familiar with the comic books, Justice League, a Tower of Babel storyline, where Ra's al Ghul uses Batman's own plans to defeat the Justice League. Batman made the plans. He had justification for making the plans because members of the Justice League had been brainwashed in the past. He never implemented the plans himself. In Teen Titans, Robin had the plans. He made a suit to implement the plans and implemented the plans personally. That's a far worse sin. I don't care what you say.
He's a dick.
He is dick.
They never said that he was dick.
I know, I was making a joke. See,
to me, that was one of the things.
I just call him Jason. I just call him Jason and just get it over with.
Well, see, I mean, we joke around about this, but to me, that was one of the things I hated about it. That was, they would never say whether this was Dick Grayson, whether it was Jason Todd, whether it was Tim Drake, whether it was somebody else. I mean, yeah, they had the one episode with the Batmite type character,
the Robin Knight, Larry the Titan, which was a terrible episode because you want to know why? The opening had Larry singing the song in Japanese.
Oh, Jesus, I remember that.
Yeah.
Driving a little car.
With the with his name being Dick Grayson spelled backwards, kind of a, ha-ha, we're going to say something and make all the fanboys and fangirls go crazy that this is Dick. No,
that was just stupid. It wasn't really wankery, it was as much as stupidity. And I just don't get why people give Robin a pass in the series, because he really was an asshole. Because, like I said, Batman made the plans. He didn't implement the plans. This Robin made the plans, implemented the plans, and the thing is this. They write in such a way that makes them want you to say that Robin was right, but there's no way that's possible, because Robin was an asshole in this thing. Because number one, not only did he make the plans and made a suit to implement the plans, he apparently made the suit out of some sort of rare radioactive isotope that can explode or something, which they touched in a later episode. And by the way, he didn't get hell for that either.
Yeah, there's just so... I mean, it was stuff being pulled out of their butts for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And the Robin character, there was nothing likable about him. I mean, at least, again... with Young Justice, you had the running joke of, well, he was trained by Batman.
Well, in Young Justice, I like the fact
that as a joke.
In Young Justice, I like the fact that they did the joke of can't anyone just be whelmed?
No, that was in Young Justice.
That's what I'm saying. In Young Justice, I like the fact that they did that.
Well, no, I hated that thing.
I love the whelmed joke. I love it because it's a good running joke. I'm so whelmed. Which means that this is expected. I love that, because why can't someone just be overwhelmed? Why are you always have to be overwhelmed or underwhelmed? Can't you just be whelmed? I thought that was funny, Tom.
Yeah.
It was It was a Greg Weisman attempt at being cutesy with the language, and it just, it failed. It fell flat for me.
Yeah, and yet they repeat that in another episode.
Well, you know what? Yeah. It was better. It was better than, duh, Megan.
Yeah, I wish they'd get rid of that. I mean, because we're talking about bubbly characters like they have Starfire in Teen Titans.
Yeah, Megan's,
and to me, it works better. It actually
Megan's
works better.
Megan. Megan's better.
Yeah.
Megan's better. I'll put it that way because I think they don't write her as so having to put the word the in front of anything to make it sound like she's naive. So tell me about the mall or something like the something, you know, that doesn't deserve the in front of it and it sounds so fake and stupid. And the biggest sin for me is just the whole super deformed mode stuff that they did, the whole attempt to try to appease the young viewers by trying to be so anime like that you don't have an identity of yourself anymore. It's a series that didn't know what it was. It had its own identity crisis, and
I think that's a great way of putting it because it looked like it was being torn between being a good series with some good writing that could make you think versus being written for 3-year-olds.
And
I mean, some of these episodes, Barney the Dinosaur would look and say, boy, that's juvenile.
No, I mean, when I first met Ben and I told him I kind of liked it, you know, I never really clarified. It's like the only reason I ever enjoyed watching this series is because I wanted to watch something that I could turn my brain off.
Well, and, you know, they're turning your brain off and telling your brain to take a 3-week vacation.
Yeah,
John.
Well, yeah,
that's not even what I was going to say.
Keep in mind, I was working graveyard shifts at a 7-Eleven at the time, so I kind of needed this show for that in that respect. But no, there's the only thing that I would call a redeeming quality of this series is how they went into the past, and I think Tom mentioned earlier is how they mined it for characters from the Silver and the Bronze Age of Teen Titans.
This is straight up Wolfman era. This isn't mining multiple eras. This is just the straight up Wolfman era.
Like villains and certain characters that came in later in the season. I mean, I remember one of the first Teen Titans comics I ever read was like some old like yellow from one of the Batman Family 100-page specials from back in the day was the Ding Dong Daddy issue.
Which means that was 1965.
Yeah,
in the original Teen Titans run,
he was there. He was there, John.
Yeah,
he was there.
It's all good. I'm just saying. You know,
I remember. I remember Honey Bun.
Okay, this
Tom knows Honey Bun.
I'm not saying anything. I know nothing.
You know about Honey Bun.
I'm pulling the Schultz defense.
Know nothing.
I know nothing.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, they went like Mad Maud, Ding Dong Daddy, you know, a lot of when they brought in some of the exigent Teen Titans team members in the last season, I enjoyed that of the show that, you know, at least they made somewhat of an effort. But like you said, they took the easy way out in everything. So it's not that much of a redeeming quality. I mean, you'd think with a comic property for as long that's been running as long as Teen Titans, you think they would that it's almost a cornerstone of DC in a way. Why would they not put more of an effort into this series?
Well, I don't know. I because Sam Register is an idiot, Glenn Murakami's a hack, and
well, it all comes down to again target audience. You had this very successful main DCAU with Batman, Superman, Justice League, where this was definitely written more for, I mean, they say it was a teenage show. No, this was written for
adults
with a lot of stuff in there that kids would understand. Teen Titans was written for children. It was written for people who didn't have to, or people don't have to think that hard about it. You know, with the bright colors, the fast pace, and the simplistic writing, it was not made for heavy storylines. So in the later seasons, when they started to bring it around and bring some of the heavier storylines, the better storylines in, it was a complete mishmash. And things didn't fit.
And I got another Robin's an Asshole example if you wish to hear.
Ah, sure, okay. Why not?
Okay, there was the episode after Slade was apparently killed where Robin was seeing Slade as a hallucination. You guys know the episode I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do.
Where the one where they reveal that Robin's basically beating himself up Tyler Durden style, and basically see, everyone's trying to be kind and understanding Robin because they're just trying to be nice to him. And the very next episode, Beast Boy gets exposed to a chemical that changes his DNA or something. I don't know what it is. And basically the storyline is this, that they know his genetic code's all fucked up because of this stuff. And they know that he turns into a beast when he's agitated. So instead of trying to be as kind as understanding the Beast Boy as they were to Robin in the previous episode, they're Gestapo interrogating him until to the point where he turns into the man beast again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just throughout the whole series, all the only reason anything ever got done amongst the team is that Robin would pull a hissy and bitch everyone out.
Yeah. And I love the fact that they turned a submarine into a spaceship and they didn't explain why. Or how. It's just, oh, this submarine's a spaceship now.
Well, because they could.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
They actually used this device, which was created by an alien race known as the Plot.
With its mystical technology that can never be explained.
Yes, and I apologize because that is not my joke. That is from Peter David.
Oh, God.
One of the ones I loved. Now, I will have to say that depending upon who you talk to amongst people who have watched, not liked, not hated, but watched the Teen Titans series, there was one thing that tangentially put it possibly within the main DCAU universe.
Are you going to talk about Speedy?
I am going to talk about Speedy.
Well, I can prove that it's not because of one word.
Let's hear it.
Let's see. What's the name of the alien species? Let's see. I'm trying to remember the name of the alien species that showed up in...
While you look that up, let me explain the reason why people do this. There was an episode of DC of Justice League Unlimited called Patriot Act, where General Wade Eiling, who was originally from the Captain Atom comic book and a real SOB, takes a super soldier serum and becomes what in the comic books was the Shaggy Man.
Without the hair. Let's
look that up. Which actually did happen in the comic books, but through a much more different process.
It was the Grant Morrison run of the JLA.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, I found one word that proves that it's non-continuity.
Okay.
Gordanians.
Okay, I'll let you explain that after I finish up with what I'm saying.
I will let you finish.
Okay. In the episode Patriot Act, which was an episode I loved for a reason, all the heavy hitters of the Justice League are out doing various missions amongst the universe. So they need a replacement for Superman. Green Lantern volunteers, along with a few other heroes, including Stargirl, and they find out it's to take Superman's place on a float in a parade. Now, the entire episode is basically...
A shout-out to Seven Soldiers, right?
Seven Soldiers of Victory, the original ones. And it goes... I mean, it's basically the non-powered heroes against the super-powered monster, voiced by J.K. Simmons. Go Cave Johnson.
Burn his house down.
Yes, with the lemons. The Seven Soldiers of Victory in the original comic books were the Star-Spangled Kid, which became Stargirl. Different people, thank you. Stripesy, who became Stripe.
The mecha suit, yes.
Yep. The Shining Knight, the Crimson Avenger, Vigilante, Green Arrow, the Crimson Avenger's sidekick, Wing, who was not included in this episode, and Speedy. The Speedy in this episode had the exact same costume as the Speedy from the Teen Titans cartoon.
And same and voice.
Was voiced by the same actor who was Mike Irwin, if I remember correctly.
But see, the whole thing is the Gordanian thing makes it all crumble down. You know why?
What's the Gordanians got to do with the Prince of Tea in China?
Okay. The Gordanians were the bad guys that the Thanagarians were alluding to in Starcross. They had the Gordanian ship in Starcross, and no one has seen a Gordanian ship before, correct?
Correct.
Okay, Teen Titans, if it fits in the DCAU continuity, has to take place 10 years before Starcross, correct? 5 to 10 years before, correct?
I couldn't say because I never really looked into that one that closely.
Well, let's say 5 years. Let's say 5 years, 5 to 7 years. In the episode where Starfire first shows up in Teen Titans, where they did a flashback of how Starfire got on Earth, She was being chased by a Gordanian fleet. There was a Gordanian ship hovering over Jump City. And see, you know, I think Batman would know what a Gordanian is after that.
Possibly. But, I mean, I think that's about as flimsy as the argument about the costume.
I'm just saying that I think the Gordanian thing is better proof than this costume.
See, I mean, I think that the costume is, it's not, it's a little more substantial than the Gordanian thing.
I've heard people defend the Gordanian.
Let me first say that I do not want Teen Titans anywhere near the canon universe of the DC Animation Universe. One was marvelously written, almost always, great voice actors, and then you had the other, which was Teen Titans.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, I've heard defenses to the Gordanian thing as flimsy as, oh, nobody looked outside their window for 30 minutes.
This is Batman.
And I've heard others to where we don't know where Jump City is, even though I said in an episode they said it outright it's California.
Mm-hmm. It's San Francisco.
It is San Francisco. It's obviously San Francisco. Ding, ding. But I just, I don't want to, like, get into arguments about Teen Titans continuity because it's obvious it ain't.
It's much better if it is not part of the continuity. I just consider the costume thing a coincidence.
Well, a costume looks like a costume. If Superman has the same costume in that episode of Tiny Toons where he showed up as the one in the same costume as he had in Superman, then, oh my God, Superman has the same costume in two different cartoons. He has the same costume in the Ruby Spears cartoon, too. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Neil, tell us the Ruby Spears cartoons are the same continuity. It's the same costume, Neil.
Now, wow. Come on. After Superman has basically had one costume since the 1930s.
I know. I'm just illustrating a point. Yeah.
Right. But there was enough distinct features on the one that people could make a point of it. Now, like I said, I'm not one of those people. I'm just bringing this up for the listener's satisfaction.
I know. I just want to pick on that because it's just so fun to pick on that. And
but I will say, I mean, when it comes down to the character, I think the character of Speedy was handled much better for his short term in Patriot Act than it was in the episodes that he was ever in Teen Titans.
Because he's Robin number two.
He's Robin number two in Teen Titans, whereas the conflict and the give and take between him and Green Arrow
is much more natural. It's much more natural.
I mean, yeah, it was more human. It was more interesting.
Versus making him Robin number two, and they're just Robin playing against Robin, and they're both Robin, and how's that exciting?
Yeah.
And then you have, I don't know. I hate how they made Cyborg this jive-talking booyah guy.
Don't even say that word again. I was hoping never have to hear it again.
And you know what? You know what really sucked? They tried to do the throwback to Marvel Animation of all things in the episode where Cyborg infiltrates Hive by giving him Thing rings.
I
shit you not. They gave him Thing rings, and it's like, Thing rings, do your thing! I shit you not. That happened.
And his human form was basically Luke Cage.
God damn it.
In that episode.
You know what really sucked was this was actually the only time that they were winking off to anyone other than Robin when they were winking off to a Cyborg, because in the Brother Blood season, they were saying that Cyborg can't be hypnotized by Brother Blood, and they don't know why. At first they were saying it's because he's half robot, but then Brother Blood became half robot too and fought him, and he still couldn't reprogram or hypnotize Cyborg, and Cyborg's like, well, it's because I have a soul. It's like, didn't everyone else he hypnotized have a soul? So they were implying that Cyborg had a stronger soul than everybody else, and they were winking out the Cyborg for a change.
Well, they did have all the very special episodes where they focused on one character. I mean, at the beginning of the fifth season, I think it was, where they introduced the Doom Patrol and the Brotherhood of Evil.
Oh God! By the way, they totally tried really hard to make the Doom Patrol look like analogs of the Titans by making sure that by making Robot Man look big and burly, and he never looked like that in the comics.
Nope,
never. I hear people say, "Well, what about the Grant Morrison run? He had pipe cleaner arms." That's, I'm sorry. Robot Man looked like just a just a normal sized human that was a robot, and that made the things he did in the comics look that much more intimidating.
Except during the 80s when they had the other Doom Patrol, but that's a different story altogether, which has nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, they had that. They had a couple of episodes where they focused on Starfire, the one with where Blackfire comes in, the one where she has to fight Blackfire for the throne of Tamaran, where the one where, oh, God.
She gets the pimple?
Yes. Metamorphosis something like that.
Yeah, they gave her eye beams or something.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about that. And then they gave her a pet that's like a silkworm thing that
a giant mutant slug.
God damn, that was stupid. That was almost as stupid as the Living Tofu episode.
Well,
that was pretty damn stupid.
There's nothing as stupid as Living Tofu.
Well, there's nothing as stupid as regular tofu.
Touché.
I mean, but there was just so many. I mean, the Titans East episodes. I mean, that was a cyborg episode. Those were cyborg episodes where Cyborg gets to be the leader. And what does he do? He goes back to the original, the other Titans. Why? Because they had another couple of seasons to do.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and they needed someone to fill the Booyabase.
Oh God.
Sorry. It takes one day minimum to make a good Booyabase.
Oh, God. Thanks, Ben. That's going to be stuck in my head all night. You're a friend.
Or the blade goes down the arm, not across.
But
well, you know, after watching the series, it kind of
other characters that had potential. I mean, an original character on the villain side called Jinx. I thought that was an interesting character. And when they started having the hero-villain interest between her and Kid Flash, I thought that was kind of interesting. They never went anywhere with that.
Oh, what about you forgot about one new set of new characters they introduced in the cartoon that actually made it to the comics that didn't deserve it?
Mosty Manos?
Yeah, goddammit.
Which never made sense to me. I mean, they were basically a Kid Flash replacements. And
they were two Kid Flash replacements that have to touch each other to move fast.
Yeah,
and
Wonder Twin Powers activate.
Oh, and they were Mexican.
No, Guatemalan.
Oh, God damn it. Well, basically, he spoke Spanish, and they spoke with a Mexican accent. That wasn't a Guatemalan accent, I can tell you that.
Oh, that's true. But, I mean, they brought in other heroes, some from the 80s, some from earlier. I mean, they brought in
Argent.
Panther from the 90s. They brought in Wildebeest from the 90s. They brought in
in Argent
from the 70s. They brought in Argent. They brought in Cole. I mean, they brought Cole, for heaven's sake. The only reason she was created was to die in Crisis.
Yeah, that's the thing. Marv Wolfman was told he had to give away one character to die in Crisis to prove they meant business. He created Cole just to die.
Yes. They brought in Narc. I mean, my heavens, they brought in Narc, the caveman?
No, yeah.
Granted, but this was the 60s where he was introduced. But
this was the last season. This was the last season when JLU started taking off, so they decided, let's do our own version of JLU and bring in everybody. And yeah. But the thing is, unlike JLU, this failed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the one thing I got to point out to you, Tom, is Jinx is actually a DC Comics character. I don't know if she was created before or after the series, though.
Probably after, but because I will trust Tom on his Titanology.
Yeah. I'm just pointing out because I think for some reason they couldn't use Glimmer because, you know, they had Mammoth on the Fearsome Five.
Yes.
But they couldn't use Glimmer for some reason.
Jinx, my apologies. She was created originally in Tales of the Teen Titans number 56 back in 1985 by Marv Wolfman and Chuck Patton. Yeah, she was black.
1985.
Great Scott.
No, he was an okay Scott.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just hate the fact that they always did these stupid things with Beast Boy. Beast Boy was almost more annoying than Cyborg, because Cyborg does the booyah, but Beast Boy is like, oh my God.
He's like the whiny little so-and-so.
The little brother that tags along that you want to get rid of. Now, I mean, and no matter what else, I mean, I can sum up the entire, they actually had something on the Teen Titans cartoon that to me summed up the entire cartoon. perfectly.
What was that?
Stankball.
Oh, God.
Oh. Do I want to know what that was?
No.
It was in one episode. I think it was the episode where Cyborg goes undercover into Hive. And it's a game that he and Beast Boy played by using a ball made of extremely rank dirty laundry.
That sounds about right.
And to me, that summed up this whole series absolutely perfectly. It is rank dirty laundry that they couldn't do anything else with.
Yeah, and you know, it's just really odd because I'm watching this series the same time that Justice League was on, and it seemed like every time Justice League had a great idea, Teen Titans did the exact same idea with a really piss-poor execution, like traitor subplot. Hot Girl's the traitor. She was one of the most loved characters on the show. That was not safe.
Well, in fairness, Tara was a traitor first.
I know, but I'm just saying...
But the execution of Hawkgirl as the traitor, it made absolute sense.
It was risky, it was dangerous to do, but it paid off.
And if you didn't see it coming, it was a punch in the gut.
Yeah.
Exactly. And for her to go back, and they had... I mean, there were consequences to Hawkgirl's betrayal of Earth and the Justice League. And they dealt with them in later episodes.
Well,
it wasn't just, oh, this happened, and then everything, magic reset button, everybody loves her again. People hated her.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for her to rebuild any amount of credibility.
And another example was when they did the Trigon arc. This is when Justice League Unlimited was going on. And they did the scene where the Titans had to fight evil duplicates of themselves. This is when the same episode of Justice League Unlimited happened, where Brainiac made duplicates of the Justice League they had to fight.
Yeah, based on the, with the exception of Flash, they were based on the Justice Lords. Excellent episode, by the way.
Yes.
And the Flash duplicate was...
It was Reverse Flash.
Reverse Flash, Professor Zoom.
Yes, and like I said, Teen Titans did the evil duplicate thing at the same time. I think it aired in the same week. I can bet you it aired in the same week because I bitched about it. And it's just funny because it happened the same time. These things just keep on happening the same time. And I just keep thinking to myself... I know that both these shows share a lot of the same staff. I mean, don't they realize what this looks like?
Okay, just for the listeners to know whether who's right or who's wrong, the episode where they fought the evil duplicates, which I believe was The End, Part 2, was originally broadcast on July 9th, 2005.
Okay.
The episode with the evil Justice League duplicates created by Brainiac, which was Divided We Fall... was broadcast on July 16th, 2005. So, close enough for government work.
Yes. And I just want...
Wow.
So that's pretty close, isn't it, Tom?
Like I said, close enough for government work.
Yeah, and I just want to make it clear that when I'm saying that it was close, that it really was close. It was.
And for comparison, I don't have a list of... writers for Teen Titans, but those episodes of Justice League, the last ones of the first season, where it was only supposed to run one season, Dwayne McDuffie.
Yes. But like I said, it just frustrates me just looking at this and seeing this happen and seeing these same ideas happen in both series. You can compare them. You can actually compare them.
Yes. Now, let me say one thing on a brief tangent, since we brought up Divided We Fall and Panic in the Sky, which were the last episodes of the first season. Divided We Fall, I thank you, Dwayne McDuffie, and whoever put it in there for the shout-out to Mike Jitlove, the Wizard of Speed and Time. The scenes where they had the Flash running at super speed around the Earth, and they're just using the very quick flashes of different locations on Earth, stolen directly from the Wizard of Speed and Time, probably one of the best films showing life in Hollywood.
And by the way, they also did a great job of actually showing what, you know, in the comics when the Flash runs, at least in the late 90s, early 2000s, he had electricity dancing on him all the time, and they never really animated that. Here they animated that, and it looked brilliant.
Yes.
But, looked badass is what it looked like.
Yes, and moving back to Teen Titans, where brilliance never happens. I don't know what to say. I mean, You have Mala in the brain, and not once. This is something that I have to give Peter David credit for, because Peter David actually did the what are we going to do tonight brain joke with Mala in the brain.
Well, and let me go ahead and talk. This is trivia, and somebody may correct me on this later on down the road. It's going off of an old man's faulty memory. But I seem to remember within the past 5-10 years, they had a subplot with the Brotherhood of Evil, with the Brain and Monsieur Mala.
Where they're lovers?
Yes. Which I think is probably one of both these most interesting and squickiest things that I could have ever dreamed of. But on the bright side, at least he can honestly say he loves him for his mind.
He's squicky, he's Mala, and the brain.
Yes, I'm a brain in a jar, and my lover is a giant gorilla.
Yeah. I still like the way they used Mala in the one Gorillas in Our Midst episode of Batman Brave and the Bold, where there's no brain, he's just a French revolutionary.
You know what? You know what works? You know what worked the best with Mala in the was there was this issue of the ones where all the villains are stuck on an alien planet,
Salvation Run.
Yeah, and you actually had Mala try to recruit Gorilla Grodd, and then Gorilla Grodd's like, "Fuck you, I'm going to kill you anyways."
Yeah,
which is totally in character, by the way. I thought that was brilliant because you actually have the gorillas together and they don't get along, and that's exactly how it's supposed to be. And the only thing that would make the scene work better would be Ultra Humanite, but.
Nah, he had too much class for it.
That's true.
And again, I mean, that goes to show in Justice League animated series where they had the Ultra Humanite. And yes, originally he was a human scientist who put his brain in a giant white gorilla after having it in a beautiful actress's body.
And a giant praying mantis.
Yes.
And in the Power Girl run, he wanted Power Girl's body, but sold for Terra's.
Who wouldn't want her body? Just for different purposes.
He made that joke, too.
It went through, and they had him as cultured. I mean, he was a villain, but he was intellectual.
He liked he
was
opera? Cultured,
liked opera. I mean...
Didn't like Salisbury steak.
Really?
Well, nobody's perfect. But, I mean, again, it was... They had character. And Justice League. I mean, Solomon Grundy had character. Thank you, Mark Hamill, for your terrific portrayal on that.
I didn't know that was Hamill.
That yes, was Hamill. Was.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, the man of many voices.
Yes, it's Beef Oregano, by the way.
But, I mean, even the minor ones had something to differentiate them. The episode back to Patriot Act, where it's the vigilante and the
Shining Knight.
Shining Knight going talking about watching a Clint Eastwood film.
That adds nuance to the characters versus let's go eat some pizza and play some video games. Booyah!
Yeah.
It's a dialogue between people rather than cliches and catchphrases.
Well,
characters are stereotypes.
I think one word that describes why Justice League is so much better than Teen Titans is personality. The characters in Justice League had personalities. They had backstory. They were real people, you know.
Versus stereotypes and caricatures.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that somebody out there, a lot of people out there will probably laugh at me, but I mean, there was a current series that shows that you can write children's stuff that is intelligent. And that's the current run of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, where you've got characters, where you've got... Hey, don't laugh.
No, it's a good series. It's a good series, but
it's
Neil...
awesome.
But you're proving something Neil said many episodes ago, which is...
I said that I understand why it's a hit. I before I even saw the first episode, I'm like, oh my god, this is so gonna win. But it's something that I can't really respect myself if I watch it.
and what about the audience, Neil?
That it's comprised of 30-year-old men.
Let me give full disclosure. Last year when we went to Comic-Con was when the Hub made its debut. And they had a whole pavilion up of Hub stuff, and we would see that. And they had this statue of one of the My Little Ponies, a pink one. And we thought, okay, you've got G.I. Joe. Great concept. You've got Transformers Prime. Love the ideas. We'll see what happens as long as it isn't Michael Bay. You've got Fraggle Rock being returned. Love the series back then. You've got My Little Pony. Are you kidding me? Who would watch this?
30-year-old men.
And then a friend said, you have to watch this. And I sat down. And I watched it. And when the theme started, you know, it was My Little Pony. And then it just went to this rock thing and just had it totally diverged. The art style is completely different. Lauren Faust, who is not just a good animator on her own right, but the wife of Craig McCracken, Powerpuff Girls and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
And she's got quite a...
She's got quite she's a resume got, herself.
Yeah, she does.
The music, the voice acting, some of it could have been better, but each one had character. Each thing on there had character. And it sucks you in.
Here's the brilliance of that show. I don't even watch it. I know what the character names are. I can't say that for the original My Little Pony show. I know who Derpy Hooves is.
Everybody, all hail to Derpy.
Oh, God.
I mean, and even little in jokes like Dr. Hooves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yes, they do. They have a brown and dark brown maned male pony with an hourglass on his flank. Whose mane sticks up like... David Tennant's.
Oh, okay.
And yes, he had been nicknamed Dr. Hooves.
God damn it.
Well, of course, I also like the other name for Derpy, which was... Lauren Faust had said that she always liked the name Kentucky Derpy.
I had also heard Ditsy Doo was a
That was the
name
original
considering.
Name. Yeah, that yeah. was the original name. They decided that's a different character altogether. But I mean, back to my original point. I mean, this is a show that you would think it's going to, based off an original thing that was so syrupy, the people went to diabetic shock watching this thing. To a show where they concentrate on just a small core of characters. Each one has their own personality. And it works. It works on all levels. There's things to draw in the adults, things to draw in the kids. So, I mean, even though it's a kid-oriented show, anybody can watch it. Teen Titans failed miserably in this. There was nothing to really... If you took away the costumes, which would please a lot of perverts out there...
And that's another thing. Neil, I want Neil to give his bitch about Raven's costume in a minute.
It's not really a bitch, but go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, each one is a stereotype. It's not a personality. It's not a character. It is.
You have stuck up white boy. You have black ghetto guy.
You've got naive ghetto boy. You've got the geek.
You have naive girl. You have goth girl.
Goth girl, and that's it. And each one plays to those stereotypes.
So Neil, the costume, please.
Okay, there's a certain costume style I like, but I like it on characters like
Zatanna,
like Power Girl and Wonder Woman, and all these female characters who are built like really imposing and strong looking. Raven in that series looks like a 15-year-old waif, and she's wearing that costume, and it just feels like pedo bait.
Pretty much what it is. I mean,
and you have Grunmer Crommy who can't draw breasts; they're just bubbles.
Yeah.
Well, but in his favor, I mean, they were trying for the anime look, and for the anime look, that is a lot of what they draw out there is just silicone.
You should watch more Gainax. You should watch more Gainax, Tom.
So I don't watch that much anime.
So, John, you still with us?
Yeah, no, I'm still here. I'm just sitting back and enjoying the feeding frenzy here.
So, John, what's the episode of Teen Titans you hate the most?
Honestly?
Yes.
I can't remember the name of the episode.
That's fine.
It was the one where Cyborg was building the T car, and then
the car got stolen by Gizmo.
Yeah, and
that one was terrible because Cyborg's supposed to be like the smartest technical guy on the team, and he builds a car that's supposed to have all this high tech stuff on it, and who steals it but two punks?
Yeah, the episode was Car Trouble.
Oh, God damn it.
See, if you ask me which episode I hated the most of Teen Titans, that's very easy. Divide and Conquer, the very first episode, because it meant there was going to be more after that.
Okay, you know, can I switch mine?
Apprentice for me because of the blatant ripoff of Empire and Spider-Man. I mean, there's bad writing, and then there's obviously ripping off a famous popular movie, fan fiction writing, where you steal a line word for word and a scene word for word, and you're just totally flaunting that you can do it.
Okay, let's flip it. If you had to say there was one episode you liked, which one would it be?
Oh, God damn it.
I'm just going to take the plunge and say that final episode where you have all the Titans fighting all the Brotherhood.
That wasn't the final episode, John.
No, that was movie.
Okay, no, that's...
The final in Tokyo or something like that?
No, the final the final episode was the one where they showed Terra alive again.
Oh, yeah.
And Beast Boy's her stalker. No, I'm not fucking with you. He's her stalker. He's fucking stalking her through the whole episode.
No, that's I remember that one, but that's the final. That's great. But my favorite is the, you know, all the Titans versus the Brotherhood.
You know what? Around this time is when the embargo started happening on Bruce Timm. You know, where he can't use Batman characters except for Batman himself on Justice League Unlimited anymore. You know about the embargoes, right, Tom?
Because of the movies, yes.
And what happened was...
they had the same thing with Aquaman because they were going to have his own spinoff of Smallville,
which and
failed.
And Bruce Timm made fun of this embargo because he wasn't allowed to use any version of Robin because Robin was on Teen Titans.
Yeah.
So what he did was in the episode epilogue of Justice League Unlimited, he gave the female Dr. Light like a shit ton of lines, and she was just an extra. Just so people would call attention to who is this female character who looks like Dr. Light from the Teen Titans show. Because the excuse given to Bruce Timm was they didn't want to confuse audience members with multiple versions of the same character.
Oh, Jesus.
Because, as you know, Dr. Light was the male evil Dr. Light who didn't yet rape Sue Digby, but... Yeah,
thank you for retcons. Oh, I still hate that one. Now, I will say, I mean, if I had to choose an episode that I thought was better than the others... I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was the first appearance of Kid Flash.
Lightspeed.
I mean, I thought that's Wally. I loved it. It was definitely Wally, and it was even voiced by
Michael Rosenbaum.
By Michael Rosenbaum, who voiced the Flash
and played Lex Luthor.
Just League. Yeah. And I thought, I mean, he had character. He had a personality.
And they made a point to show that he was faster than Plus and Minus.
Yes. And then even the whole subplot with the him being interested in Jinx and her wavering between staying evil and going over to the good side. That was an interesting episode. And it didn't have all the anime-ishness, if that's a word, which the rest of the series did. It was a very tolerable episode.
And you know what episode I hated?
Well, this isn't hate. You got to choose one you like first.
Okay, one I like. God damn it, Neil, you pick first.
Oh God, I can't think of anything. I don't know. I've been trying to think this whole time, and I can't think of a damn thing. Because I already have like a least favorite pick.
Okay.
No, I'm drawing a blank.
I know my pick. It's the one where Beast Boy has to lead like these scrubs to free the Titans because there's no Robin in it, and there's someone other than Robin being the leader, even though it's Tofu Boy. And one thing they didn't touch on was they had fucking Jericho there, and they didn't say anything about who Jericho is or anything like that.
Yeah, and Mal has a great history with the Titans back from the 70s. You're thinking of the second to last episode, Titans Together.
Yes.
And yeah, I really think they did Jericho a disservice because, well, I mean, how he even got, well, how he got his original name of Jericho and his original powers as Jericho. This is going back into old man history. And I don't know if anybody wants to hear it, but I don't care.
Okay.
Mal was a Titan, but a non-powered Titan. He was a black character added in to be a Titan. And in one comic, he died.
Well, lots of Titans die.
Yes. But he had to go and face off with the Angel Gabriel, Angel Jericho. No, Joshua. Yeah, Gabriel, and had to fight Gabriel to try to return, and was given Gabriel's horn. So when he returned to Earth, he had Gabriel's horn and was able to use the powers of it.
And Gabriel was also part of that scrub team, too.
But they retconned that to where he became Jericho and had a technological horn, which makes absolutely no freaking sense. But
yeah,
sort of a poor man's Pied Piper.
Yeah, and you also have all this. Like I said, if I had picked that one, it was because it was someone other than Robin leading a team, and it was the scrub characters. But you know, you don't touch who these characters are, and you just sort of them.
But you could say the same thing about Titans East, the two Titans East episodes.
That's true. It's the same. Episode. It's the same thing. And by the way, was Bumblebee voiced by Cree Summer?
Oh, heavens, I don't remember. Like I said, I block out a lot of that.
I know, but I'm just saying you have a sassy black girl. It's on Cartoon Network. I mean, what are the odds?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ask me, there are two voice actors I absolutely despise, and she's one of them.
Well, the thing is, she used to have a range. She really used to have a range because when she did when she did Penny in Inspector Gadget, she sounded different than Number 5.
Okay, actually, it was Takiya Crystal Kima who was Bumblebee.
Okay.
Who was from, let's see, Cosby, not the Cosby Show. Well,
that's not too bad. Yeah. That's not too bad, but like I said, it's. I almost thought that was a Cree.
Yeah, summer.
It could have been a Cree summer role because she's the same voice all the time now.
Yes,
Sassy Number 5.
Well, that and Tim Curry. I just fingernails on the blackboard whenever I hear their voices.
But. Like I said, it's if I have to pick worst episode, that's much easier. you get a vocal talent, vocal god, like Keith David, and what do? An episode like Atlas.
Yeah.
Where basically the whole idea is Cyborg has a certain upper limit in his strength. That's just the technological limit. That's just what the limit is. And here he has to fight Atlas, and he loses the first time because that's just the limit of his robot body. Second time he fights, and he's able to overcome the limit. How? Through spirit.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Not through just like being smarter or like coming up with some sort of trick or anything. No, he just does it through spirit.
Just sounds so wrong.
Well, and speaking of Keith David, remind me after the show, there's some news about him that at least I love.
Okay, but I think that wraps off my feelings of Teen Titans. Neil, what's your least favorite episode?
My least favorite episode, I'm going to kind of cheat here and just say the movie. It's a movie that is built around the entire Weeaboo premise. Because they go to Japan. Why? To follow some anime-ish villain. And they go there, they run into a parody of Zenigata. They fight cat girls, giant robots, and Godzilla. They reproduce about 10 minutes of Akira in the movie. Where does the final battle take place? At a manga printing facility. It is the most ridiculous Japanese wankery I've ever seen. I hate you, Teen Titans.
Now, fuck again, you. Full disclosure, no. I will say that you can rip off Akira in something like that and have it done right. And that is Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, where it was pretty much a scene-by-scene with the laser beam shooting down at the Batmobile. And that was taken directly from Akira. The animator for it was the same animator from Akira. So it can be done right. Teen Titans did.
This was almost Family Guy-esque in how they just did it scene for scene.
Yes.
They completely reproduced the bicycle taillight effect whenever they would change lanes and it would streak. They did that. They did the bar scene. Oh, it's just ridiculous. It was like, okay, we get it. You like Akira. Not that good a movie anyway.
it's an art house choice.
Oh, it is the art house choice.
But wrapping up, this is the DC Apocrypha episode. We didn't really hate Zeta or Static too much.
No.
Teen Titans we do hate. It's you shouldn't see it. It's not fit for human consumption. I would recommend the first season of Static. I think unless you want to like watch the Anasazi episodes in the later seasons, those are pretty good too. But really, when they start doing the crossover stuff and start selling out, stop watching it. Zeta is pretty good. Limited run. Don't know if it's available for DVD anywhere. But Teen Titans, don't watch. That's my recommendation. Neil?
I would recommend Zeta. It's the one I've seen the least, actually. But I have seen a couple episodes and it was fairly enjoyable. I wasn't that big on Static Shock, but it's okay. Teen Titans, I've seen more of it than I ever need to. Damn pedo bait weeaboo crap that it is. I'm just flustered that this show even exists.
Tom?
Out of the three of them, Zeta Project, best writing, best animation, best characterization. So when there's trouble, you know who to call. Zeta.
Oh, God.
John?
I'm going to say pass on Zeta. I was just never a big fan of it. I'm totally going to recommend Static. I mean, yeah, the first season is the superior product, but it's pretty enjoyable all the way through, especially the Anansi episodes. And Teen Titans should go die in a ditch.
All right. Well, I am your host, Ben.
TV's Mr. Neil.
I'm Thomas Rivor from 910 Comics, 910cmx.com, who will never name a character Brushogon.
And I'm JT from Saskatoon.
All right, and goodbye and good night.
Bye. The Webcast Beacon Network has been covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. With the Webcomic Beacon, its newscast, the Tropecast, and Web Fiction World.
You know, you can take a break from stupid things on Tumblr to go look at something useful.
I would feel cheated if one of my friends said, hey, I wanted to share this comic book, and they gave me three pages torn out of the comic book.
Depends upon whether or not the action girl is capable of penetrating the wall of stock footage that the magic girl throws up while she's prepping.
Not only hungover, but I also accidentally ate spoiled cream cheese, so I also had mild food poisoning.
Anti-traditional publishing much?
No, it's nothing to do with that.
You'd have to be buried like hazmat, like an assault mine.
For 3 years, I've shown up once a week and tried to be serious.
Normally, we just sit around talking about boobs, but...
Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction, all at webcastbeacon.com.
Go! 大きな声